NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter Matthew DeFranks in the post-mortem edition of the NetFront. Matt, a lot to unpack from yesterday at Centene Community Ice Center. Several key Blues spoke in addition to Doug Armstrong and Drew Bannister. So let's start with the news of the day, and that Drew Bannister is a finalist to be the next head coach of the Blues, the next more permanent head coach of the Blues. But he has not been handed the job just yet. We talked last time about the pros and cons of Drew, but your thoughts on the news from Doug Armstrong that he's down to a short list and that Drew Bannister made the short list.
Yeah, I guess in the end, we shouldn't have been that surprised. If Doug Armstrong had a replacement in mind, we would have probably got that named. And then Drew Bannister obviously would have not got the job. But without a replacement to announce, I can see why they just say he's a finalist. But, you know, in the end, if they truly wanted him, I mean, they had 4 or 5 months to do it. And I can understand how we still end up with the Blues hiring Drew Bannister if, you know, they don't get maybe the guys out there that they haven't talked to or haven't done their, you know, research interviews with. So I don't know. It was fine. I don't know. It's he's a finalist. We've seen what he can do. We know that there will be changes if he's around in training camp. We know the kind of deficiencies of the team this year under him. We know what the record is. We know why the record's that way. And if we know all these things, the Blues certainly know these things and more, right? They have the most information about their coaching search as it is. And, you know, when we talked to Doug yesterday, I think the biggest thing that jumped out was when we asked about the criteria for the Nets coach. And he basically said, yeah, sometimes you look for a head coach to get us the Nets 3-4% to win the Stanley Cup. And that's not the coach that we're looking for. This is a different sort of thing. We want to find a coach that can find opportunity and find growth for the young guys and have the respect of older guys. So it doesn't sound like it's kind of the cup or bust kind of veteran coach that has all that's in him. So I don't know. I don't know where Doug goes with it, but we know it's obviously not over.
Right, and that leads to the question. I mean, it seems like, you know, a very popular topic here in the STL has been, could you bring back Coach Q? Will he get freed from his banishment from Gary Bettman? Obviously, Doug Armstrong did not want to discuss particulars, and in particular, Coach Q. But it seems like if I'm Joel Quenneville, I'm looking for that opportunity to put that team over the top to get that final few percentage points to get a team to make that deep run, to make that chase for the cup. I'm not sure I sign up for, if I get a chance to coach again in my advanced stage, I'm going to sign up for a work in progress, which is pretty much what Doug says. Any coach coming in has to understand this is a work in progress.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the jobs that are open right now, a lot of them are works in progress other than Los Angeles. I mean, LA is a 99-point team, plus 41 goal differential, that's looking for a new coach. And you know, who knows, maybe Hiller ends up getting it. But every other job is kind of in a similar stage to the Blues or even behind it when you look at what Buffalo, New Jersey, Ottawa, what they're all going through. And it's like St. Louis is not in the Los Angeles boat, but they're not quite in the full rebuild like those other teams are. So, you know, if you're Joel Quenneville, and let's say that Gary Bettman does reinstate year after you know, being unavailable to coach because of his role in the Blackhawks scandal, Los Angeles would probably be the team that would set up for that type of scenario where you're just looking to make the team a playoff team into more of a cup contender. But I can understand also the local ties here with his history with the organization. And yeah, I it feels like the Blues aren't looking for that type of leadership.
It seemed like when he mentioned that some of the guys he wants to talk to, and again, it's supposed to be a small list, are guys that are still coaching. That seems to suggest there might be an assistant coach on a cup contender. That's a possibility. And nobody really came to mind for me right off the top of my head. Is he looking for somebody, an emerging coach, or maybe a guy who's been a head coach but is currently in a secondary role there that would still be working? That was maybe the only breadcrumb that he dropped, that somebody's still out there working. That's what my mind jumped to. Did you have any thoughts on that breadcrumb?
Yeah, the only thing that, I mean, I think the assistant jumps to mind. I don't know the assistant pool in the NHL well enough to know who in the playoffs right now is worth pursuing. And honestly, at a certain point, head coaches are pretty similar, and we know even less about assistant coaches, right? But in terms of guys that are actually still going right now, the one that jumped out was Carl Taylor in Milwaukee. He coaches Nashville's AHL team. They went on like a 16 or 17 game win streak this season. He's been in the AHL for quite some time, usually talked about as an NHL candidate, and Milwaukee is still going to be playing. I did ask Doug yesterday, hey, your recent history suggests that NHL head coaching experience is something that you look for. Is that a prerequisite? And his answer was flatly no. So whether that's ends up being true or not, whether that narrows the candidate pool, or in the end, if they end up hiring someone with a previous NHL coaching experience, I don't know. But the fact that Carl Taylor's still playing, and he doesn't have NHL experience. That's a name that jumps out to me. And yeah, I mean, the pie in the sky has to be Rod Brind'Amour when his contract runs out at the end of the year. But I don't know why he would ever leave that situation in Carolina. I mean, he's a franchise hero as a player, as a coach, and he's got a great team and a great setup there. So I don't know why he would ever leave, but that is someone whose contract is up and obviously has one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, the only thing I would say to that is sometimes owners are stupid, and that owner's been known to do some odd things. And I go back to Barry Trotz. I mean, why would Barry Trotz leave? A winner, a champion. All he did because the owner didn't want to meet the demand. If I'm Rod, I want to be the, if not the highest paid coach in the league right there, and that owner will cut any corner. So I mean, it's a thought. I mean, that
Yeah.
would be it's a pie that might be attainable. But again, if Rod is going to bolt and he's going to leave a team that he has set up to just be on autopilot success for a long time with those guys he's got in place, they play their way and they're always playing their way. It's like he's just going to rack up 100 points a year till doomsday if he stays. It seems he's shown no sign otherwise. So if he does leave, it seems like he's going to go someplace better that's going to let him continue to chase cups. And you look at here, you talk about Ellie. The only other team I think that I would jump at if I'm a coach would be New Jersey. I'd have to know how this organization is being run going forward. I'd have to know what the plan is to get a goaltender, but that team could be, despite being in heavy competition for playoff berths, I mean, there's a lot to work with there.
Yeah.
Ottawa's got talent, Buffalo's got talent, a lot of potential for the right coach in both of those spots, but boy, New Jersey. With the right circumstances, if you knew what they were running the organization correctly, would be interesting.
Yeah, and I think we talked about it yesterday a little bit out there at Centene that New Jersey, they're missing Hamilton for so much of this year. They have Hughes on the back ends. They have Nemec on the back end. Like those are three nice pieces on their defense. Up front, their top six is probably among the best in the league when you look at what you can do with Hughes and Heischer and Meyer and Jesper Brad and all those guys. Like they have a really solid young core, and I believe a lot of them were signed for quite some time, so they already have a decent amount locked up on the books. And that would be a team that, if you can find some goaltending, you can find some maturation from those young guys, you can be okay. So yeah, I agree with you. I mean, St. Louis isn't a bad job, you know, because but it's probably behind LA, New Jersey. I would say it's probably ahead of Ottawa and Buffalo just because of the organizations. But it's probably a mid-tier job for this cycle.
Another item that came up, and it was no shock that Doug Armstrong, he didn't offer many clues as to thoughts about the roster, but he did reiterate his desire to keep Pavel Buchnevich. Pavel addressed that to a degree afterwards. Not much he can say. I mean, somebody asked directly, what would it take? I mean, well, you know, for him to want to stay. Well, you know, as we, the discussion with Doug as well. It's like, well, once, like Doug thought, at his age, he's going to want to win again. He's going to want to know that he can win, and he's going to want that. But he's also, what was goes on said, he's going to want to get paid. And Doug said he's going to get his money either way. He's going to get paid. He knows that. So Doug's going to is going to have to pay to keep him. He's going to have to pay competitively, and that competitive rate just keeps going up. Your thoughts on the likelihood of that of them getting something done? It's Pav's a bit of a mystery. He likes it here. He said he likes it here. He pointed out that he's got a bigger role here after coming here, and that's a good thing for him. He didn't he acknowledges that this year wasn't nearly as good as last year, but you know they're going to have to show him something, both in commitment to winning and also to pay him.
Yeah, my favorite thing from talking to Pavel Buchnevich yesterday was, you know, he's asked about the contract extension possibility this summer, and he goes, "Well, you guys all had me traded at the deadline for 2 months. He had me traded everywhere." So, when I spoke to him after the trade deadline, it clearly it wasn't fun for him to go through that, and it's likely to repeat in the summer, in next trade deadline, at least the chatter around him, if there is no extension in place. So that's one thing. But like you said, he's gonna get paid, whether it's here, whether it's somewhere else, he's gonna get his money. Unless a pandemic comes and suddenly he doesn't get his money. We've seen that before, right? But I think for the Blues, it has to come down to term. I think you can live with a, you know, a 4 or 5 year term. I just don't think they can afford to go 6, 7, 8 years on a guy who's going to be 30 years old when his current contract runs out. So if you can get that term down a little bit more, and you can use him as a piece to be competitive in the NHL, and then once those kids arrive in 3 years, and maybe they take on bigger roles, and you know, when I say arrive in 3 years, that's key contributors on an NHL team, right? So once they truly arrive in you know, 2, 3 years, and he can be more of a secondary player at that point, and you've seen what he can do in the past few years as a top player, and if you establish that depth in, you know, 3 years or so, and he's still the same player, I think you can live with that. But it's the long-term deal where we've seen the Blues get in trouble with aging players, right? We see it. We just have to look at their cap table right now and see it. And I haven't done the full comps on what Buchnevich would be kind of in line for. I'll probably work on that in the next week or two, just to see what the recent deals that have been signed and for guys his age, guys his production, his position. So it's I don't want to say delicate because it's not really all that fragile, but the line between good and bad deal I think hinges more on term versus versus cap hit.
I think it's an interesting point that an interesting reminder that Doug made yesterday, and he said, about trading guys for future assets. And like one thing you could do, and we've discussed it with Vucinovic's case, could have done it at the trade deadline, could do it this summer. You trade him for multiple future assets. But like Doug says, well, then you're replacing him though in the meantime with somebody who's an AHL player or worse. And that's a problem. When you look at this team, if you subtract Buchnevich and you don't replace him with another proven scorer, which you're unlikely to do, since that it would just be a wheel spin. If you're trying to go future, you go future. It would be difficult to make a move with him and stay on this course that Doug has committed to and still has permission to travel, of trying to compete and retool at the same time. You move him out for future assets, it puts you in a tough spot because this team has is woefully short of offensive scoring depth, at least until more of these players arrive.
Yeah, and like I think we talked about this around the trade deadline. Like, there was no rush to make a deal at that point because they didn't have to. You know, they had all the leverage in the situation across the league, and even in going into the summer, there shouldn't be a rush. And so, if the Blues get approached and there's a deal that says we have this NHL player that can help you right now, this prospect that can help you in 2 years, and this draft pick that can help you in four. I think that's something that you want to look for. You want to build waves into a trade like that, right? And if they're able to do that and not have to replace him with an AHL player, not have to wait forever for contributions from a draft pick when you have a prospect and an NHL talent coming back, like those are deals that you look for, right? And I'm not sure that that's out there. It obviously wasn't at the trade deadline, or else we would have seen a move, but that's the scenario that I would envision kind of a possibility with if I was a GM, I would look for that sort of deal. And you know, it's he's a funny guy, Pavel Buchnevich, and I really was hoping that he would just come out and say, well, the money, you know, because he is a very honest guy. And when you ask him a question, he'll tell you what he thinks for the most part. So, I was kind of hoping yesterday that, you know, when I asked like what's the determining factor with whether or not you sign an extension, and I was hoping he would kind of say money, but that didn't happen. So,
Yeah, I was just waiting for that. I thought he'd just smile and say that. I mean, exactly.
yeah, like you know
Why wouldn't he?
the
I mean,
yeah.
of course, that's what it's gonna ultimately.
Like the Buchnevich smile, where he has like it's
Yeah.
a smile of half of his mouth, and then he
Kind of
just
a half
smirks
smirk,
and
half smile.
ha the half smirk, half smile, and just goes money. That would have been great, but
Yeah.
we'll have to keep waiting, I guess.
It may yet come, but and it's a small factor in all this, but it did come up again in this when we talked to Doug, and that is that you don't have Snuggerud into the pile with the Bolduc and next year as a potential to at least provide some scoring depth, at least to be in the hunt.
And hope.
Just the potential to come in, at least play some and provide at least some offense. It would have been in the mix to compete for that. Now, you won't until the very end of the year, maybe. So I think that's a small factor in it. If this was a guy you thought, there's a real good chance he's going to stick with the team in a top nine role, maybe you feel like you can make still another move and bring in another guy like him in a trade to have still another guy in that pile plus other things, and start building at least a more volume of that type of player who's could at least play some next year. You can start imagining a scenario where that may make sense, but I mean, in a small way, I think that also does apply pressure to next year's roster build. The fact that's one less guy competing for that sort of partial contribution.
Yeah, and you know, I think personally, I probably lost sight of that a little bit in the spring, where you're so focused on whether Snuggerud's going to join for the last month of the season, or the last 2 weeks of the season, and I forget about all of next year, right? Where you might have had him penciled in as a third line winger with the ability to be on the second power play unit and have one timers available. And that's not there. Like, it's not going to be a training camp competition for him. He's not going to be at training camp. It's something that will impact the roster a little bit, but as far as his development goes, probably okay. He'll be one of the best players in college hockey again next year. He'll get to see the opportunity to maybe win a national championship, and Doug talked on it yesterday, and he did throw it into that Dean and Bolduc group, and we saw this year the adjustment to professional hockey that Dean and Bolduc went through that Jimmy Snuggerud's not going to go through next year. So pluses and minuses, but in the end, I wasn't counting on him to be a key contributor for next year, but it would have been an extra body, an extra skilled guy to have around that might be a hole that Doug has to plug either internally or with a short-term fix on the open market.
Now, one thing we'll have to look into is Snuggerud. I think obviously he wants to win a championship. He likes it at school. Given his family background, he's in no rush to come out and he understands what it takes to make it to the NHL. He has that, that knowledge within his own family. But the other thing is he's got to have a girlfriend there too, right? That had to be the factor. At the end of the day.
I have no idea, Gordo.
I bet it was. I bet it was. Just I'm just gonna hazard a guess. But we'll investigate that later as we track his next season in college. The Doug made the point you've raised about when asked about Dvorsky. He said you look at what he's done in the O, and you look at other guys like him who have done what he's done in the O, and then you see what those other guys like him who've done that type of thing, how they then go to the NHL. What happens when they go to the NHL? It's pretty favorable. So I think there's some hope that he'll be in the mix based on history telling you that if you produce at that level at his age in that league, that is an indicator that you're going to have some ability to, and this is the point you raised comparing him to Kyrou and Thomas, particularly looking at what Thomas was able to do making the jump. And I think Dvorsky might have a similar makeup. Interesting that he raised that point. The other thing is interesting to point out that he's just had different coaches every year forever, that he's just been. He hasn't been in one place for very long just because he's progressed or sought a better opportunity as he's worked up the ladder.
Yeah, and you know what? I was thinking about that yesterday too, about the coach comments and the lack of stability and kind of bumping and moving everywhere, and that's just part of hockey, man. Like, that's it's especially when you're a young player that players get traded in junior hockey. They move up to the AHL for a few weeks. They go play in World Juniors. They do all like they have a lot of different. That's part of just being a young player. And even in the NHL, like I was thinking the other day, this was my 7th year covering the NHL, and I think I've covered 7 different head coaches. Now that was across 3 different organizations, but like that's, I think it's just the sport. It's just hockey, right? They go through coaches, and so that doesn't really concern me a lot, especially having spoken with him and people around him. He's a very mature kid. I mean, he was a teenager living on his own in Sweden. Like he's living in a foreign country, playing professional hockey against men, living on his own as a teenager. Like, and then he moved to Ontario, and suddenly he's got a billet family. Like he kind of lost some agency when he went to junior hockey, and so he's a very mature kid. Everyone talks about him being a very professional in his approach to everything. So I think he speaks 4 languages. He speaks English, Slovakian, Czech, and Swedish, I think. So like there's a lot between the ears that can, I think, kind of paper over all that transition and different teams and stuff like that. So personally, I don't think there's anything left for him to do in the OHL. I mean, he's torn it up as a 19-year-old. There's no reason for him to go back, and or as an 18-year-old, excuse me. There's no reason for him to go back and and do the same thing over again, especially when he's eligible to play in the AHL. Obviously the goal is to be in the NHL, and I still think that's a very real possibility. Just given the fact that he's in North America, they're gonna have so many more viewings of him, whether that's development camp, prospect tournament, training camp, preseason games. Like, these are things that he wouldn't have done other than development camp. He wouldn't have done the prospect tournament, training camp, preseason games if he was playing in Sweden. And so the fact that he is over in North America, that he is available to do those things, the Blues are going to get a good look at him. And I would imagine they're going to give him a really long look to see what he can do in a top nine role next year. I mean, this is their highest draft pick in what, 15 years, right? This is not a nobody that we're hoping makes the roster out of nowhere in the fall. I think this is a legitimate guy that could come in and then be in the NHL next year.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Yeah, he's going to have to get used to doing the laundry and the meal thing again. I mean, that was the one benefit of going to a Billet family. Presumably that stuff was handled more within the family structure, playing in the O. But no, it's an interesting scenario. Plus, I think if you let him go back home, but then make sure that he comes back and spends a lot of time here, between the events you talk about, you know, the just pretty much a month of other time in St. Louis, maybe skating with guys and such, to prepare for all of this between the different events, would be wise too. Just to see, just to keep him locked in, keep him around some NHL guys, you know, track his training and such. There's a real opportunity there too, just to have him spend a fair amount of time in St. Louis, too, because he's going to be booked for all these things. You know, he's going to be just before open the first night of the season, he's going to have a lot of work done here in within the organization. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and just one more point on him. His season did end yesterday in Ontario. They lost in the playoffs, and I think the Blues, this is where the Blues would have liked Springfield to play a little bit better this year. There's only two games remaining. It's tonight and tomorrow, and they need a miracle to qualify for the postseason. They need three regulation losses from Lehigh Valley and two wins from themselves. So they need all five of those results to go their way in order to make the playoffs. And even making the playoffs is just a best of three series that they'll have in the first round. So this is where I think they, if Springfield would have made the playoffs, Dvorsky can go down there, get some AHL games in. But as it is now, being eliminated last night, Springfield plays tonight and tomorrow, the schedule just doesn't really line up for him to go down there and get a taste. I mean, maybe he plays tomorrow. I don't know. I haven't spoken to anyone to say one way or the other. But in addition to AHL playoff experience for some of the guys down there, you could also have got some playoff experience for, you know, they're your top prospect in the system. And that's where this kind of hurts them a little bit more.
All right, last topic here on the net front. Jordan Kyrou, well, he came up in a couple different ways during the postmortem day at Centene. So I'm surprised that Doug expressed some surprise that Jordan's been a bit of a lightning rod, given the fact that, you know, his rather famous disconnect with Chief that was well established. Of course, there was going to be some attention that he got, and also, you know, the hideous minus figure, all that we talked about last year with the team, the struggles to score earlier this year. There's a lot of reasons why Jordan was on everybody's mind, and yet Doug expressed some surprise that he's become somewhat of a topic. But what I found interesting was, and he just talked about a little bit, Drew Bannister talking about how he had to spend time just man-to-man talking to Jordan because Jordan was in a tough spot, which he put himself into, which he had to pull himself out of, which I think he more or less did. And just talk about that, what Bannister did, one of his big check boxes One of the boxes checked was getting Kyrou's head out and getting him on the right track, at least somewhat. I found that interesting.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we've talked about Kyrou a lot across this whole season, and it was up and down. It wasn't as consistent as people probably would have hoped from him. It wasn't the production that he had last year. It was, he was down in goals, he was down in points. Overall, I'm a big believer in on ice effects. And is the team better when you are on the ice? Is the team worse when you're off the ice? And the answer to both those questions with Jordan Kyrou is yes. Like, the Blues were a much better team with him on the ice. I know people will throw out plus minus, but what was he? Minus, he was minus 12 this year. And that is kind of a misleading number. At 5-on-5, he was plus 8. So, like, that's a combination of empty net stuff and shorthanded goals and just a mix of just weird strengths that go into plus minus that I don't really like using across an entire season, right? So, but when you look at what the Blues did when he was on the ice, they were better at controlling possession, they're better at generating more chances, they're better at preventing more chances, and I'm sure some of that has to do with who he was playing with. When he was playing for a long time with Buchnevich and Thomas, and that they handle a lot more of the de defensive responsibility than he does. But the flip side of it is they also get some of the top matchups. You can't really hide Kyrou when you're trying to put Thomas out against other first line centers out there. And I thought he had a decent season. Away from the puck, there's still work to be done. I think we'd all prefer to see Jordan Kyrou stay in battles a little bit longer, be on the forecheck a little bit tougher, be a little harder to play against on the boards. And we're not asking for him to probably light people up like Sammy Blais, but the other night in Dallas, I don't get to watch Jason Robertson that much anymore, but he's hard on pucks. He goes in, he battles on the boards, he gets to the net front, and he has a similarly, I don't want to say finesse skill set, but he's a skilled guy who has a great shot, has great vision. They're different sorts of players in the way that they create, but the fact that it's not exclusive that an offensive guy is suddenly a finesse guy, right? And if Kyrie can add a little bit more bite without losing what he does well offensively, that's probably going to endear him a lot more to Blues fans than he has throughout his career thus far. But overall, that I think the contract's going to be fine with his goal scoring and offensive production, and I think his overall game made a bunch of strides this year that make him a decent player for this team.
Yeah, my standard, my default answer on Kyrou too, when people ask, is like, look, he's got a lot of talent, which Doug pointed out. And you know what? This team needs more of that and not
Yeah.
less.
You can't teach talent.
He just had, now you have to try to get more out of it,
Yeah.
but you try to go away from talent when you're desperate for talent, which this team at this point still is. Yeah, it's not gonna be good for anybody. So, all right, Matt. One last thing, I promise. Okay, one last thing. Your most valuable player. Big discussion around the league. My goodness, I love Nathan MacKinnon, but boy, Connor McDavid has a phenomenal year. Nikita Kucherov has a phenomenal year. A lot of guys have phenomenal years this year. It was a big year for offensive players and a big year for powerful teams. A lot to choose from.
Yeah, I think in the last week, I've been woken up seven times, right? If I did my math correctly on that, but every one of those four players, Matthews, MacKinnon, McDavid, Kucherov, I've woken up one day and said, like, yep, that's the one that I'm voting for. And then a couple days go by, and then it switches, and this is the probably hardest one that I've had to do, this Hart Trophy balloting. And currently with ballots due in about 5 hours. I have Nathan MacKinnon on the top of my ballot, and it's a few things, but a lot of it I value 5-on-5 production and impacts a lot more than I do other areas of the game. I mean, that is how you impact a game, is on 5-on-5. Most of the games played on 5-on-5. You get a truer sense of the player at that strength. And seeing what MacKinnon has done, both impacting the Avalanche, we talked about earlier, are they a better team with him on the ice? And by every metric, the Colorado Avalanche are a much better team with MacKinnon on the ice versus Tampa Bay with Kucherov on the ice at 5-on-5. And the points difference is minimal enough that I can look at the offense that Nathan MacKinnon generates and what he does for himself in terms of shots on goal, expected goal, scoring chances, what he does setting teammates up. He just generates a lot more by himself than Kucherov does. And I understand the argument the other way, the point difference between teammates is obviously a big feather in the cap of Kucherov and what he's been able to do with 40 goals and 100 assists. I think I looked the other day that he, when goals are scored when he's on the ice at 5-on-5, I think he's been part of, he's got a point on 82% of them or something like that, some crazy number. So I do understand the impact that he does have on the Lightning, and this is as razor thin as I can really parse it. But I did think, MacKinnon, when I looked last night, he was the only player in the top four, I believe, in both goals and assists. Some of the other candidates, you look at Matthews and you say 69 goals, and that is a hell of an accomplishment. Oh my goodness. And McDavid 100 assists, Kucherov 100 assists. And with MacKinnon, you don't have to pick one, and that's kind of where I've landed so far. Now putting the rest of them in order, I think right now I have MacKinnon, Kucherov, and then I'll have to figure out where to put Matthews and McDavid and even fill out a number five spot too. So that's where I'm at right now. It's been a hard process, Gordo, man. Oh, this is. I am not looking forward to seeing who wins the Hart Trophy, to be quite honest.
All right, well, there you go. That's the net front presence. I'm glad I tormented Matthew a bit more. A reminder that you can get all of our podcasts and our videos, all the extra content we do on stltoday.com, all of that in addition to what we have in our fine print edition. If you're hearing us through your podcast app, a reminder, go to stltoday.com to get all that extra content. We appreciate those of you who support strong local journalism. And for Matt, I'm Jeff. Until next time, from the net front, see ya.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.